Hello, Capricorn, and welcome to all of us here. Your 2021 year ahead reading for both Capricorn Sun and Capricorn Rising. My name is Eric Francis Coppolino, your astrologer for the next hour or so. Thank you for joining me, and it is good to be with you. I'd like to start with a review of the past couple of years' astrology for you, because that has been pretty darn special, given that your ruling planet Saturn has been in your sign, and then this has been coupled with other planetary sign changes, including two outer planet sign changes that both have an influence on you. There is nothing quite like having Saturn in your birth sign or your first house. It presents a special challenge of maturity, particularly in the United States, but I think in most of the Western world, we live in what the poet Robert Bly calls the sibling society. That is a society without adults. It's like a home alone for the entire world. And, you know, in the movie Home Alone, the only grown-ups are criminals, basically. And in our Home Alone, there's the criminals and then a whole bunch more kids. And the point being here that maturity is not encouraged in our culture. It is very difficult to find. And as part of this problem, there's not really a concept of what it means to be a mature adult. And it's not encouraged. In fact, people are encouraged to be dependent on the system. They're encouraged to blame other people, blame the government, blame corporations, and very little emphasis on this urgent need that we have as self-actualizing adults, in fact, in truth, to take responsibility for our lives. So we're kind of like faux children in adult bodies for the most part. And when Saturn comes along, that is often a catch-up where it's going to try to burn off all the baby fat and create or be synchronous with situations where people need to find their way to adult responsibility and adult choices. And of course, even those words sound admonishing, right? It doesn't sound so friendly to say those things, but that is the nature of Saturn, particularly in our culture. Everyone has to grow and mature. The Saturn cycle is about growth and maturity, and so it's pretty much going to catch you wherever you happen to be. And the more interested someone is in voluntarily and consciously experiencing personal development and learning how to be an adult, the easier and more meaningful the transit will feel. And the more people are interested in maintaining their dependencies and being stuck in the past, and of not being responsible for their lives, the more challenging Saturn is going to be, the more Saturn is going to feel like a taskmaster, or some kind of a harsh, harsh authority figure. And that's often what happens when people can't maintain their boundaries, they end up running into various boundaries that are often ascribed to Saturn, and then their lives can become complicated. So we can be glad of Saturn transits, because Saturn transits are the catch-up time. They're the time when we get to become the age that we are and have the kinds of experiences that teach us how to be, participating citizens in our own lives first, and then in our culture. Saturn entered your sign in December of 2017, approximately 3 years ago, and it dipped back into Sagittarius for a little while, and then re-entered Capricorn, giving a fairly long span to the Saturn and Capricorn process, a total of 3 years. Doesn't always take that long, but it's just the way that the retrogrades were timed. And so this whole journey stretches back quite a way, but not as far back as Pluto in your sign. Pluto is the kind of like the equivalent in the modern era of what Saturn was in the ancient era, which is a bottom line type of influence that compels and enforces every kind of growth. And Pluto entered your sign in January 2008, so now we are at the end of year 13 of Pluto in your sign. This will go on for approximately another 2.5 years for the duration of, well, we'll get into Saturn and Aquarius in a moment. And so it would be hard to describe more challenging transits than Pluto and Saturn together in one's birth sign. And it has the feeling of the make it stop, oh my God, when is this going to stop kind of energy. And therefore, it is probable that this has been a difficult few years for you. And this coincides with a rather difficult year for the planet. And that year began in January of 2020 with the conjunction in your birth sign or in your first house, which is the conjunction of Saturn and Pluto on January 12, 2020. So both of these transits kind of met up in January 2020, and a long metacycle took place. There's a cycle of Saturn, there's the cycle of Pluto, and then they come together every approximately 38 years, depending on where Pluto is in its orbit, but approximately every 37, 38 years. And this can have a number of effects, one of which is it can have a kind of a crushing effect. It can have a fracturing effect. But at its best, the Saturn-Pluto conjunction has the effect of bringing out the steely determination in people. It brings out their commitment to existence. It brings out the willingness to stand up to whatever the world might seem to be doing to you. But it doesn't do this in everyone. It does this in the people who are the most determined, the very most determined. And so when you're evaluating the past few years, ask yourself, what has been the general trend? What has been the direction of movement in your life over the past few years? Have you risen to the occasion? Have you felt like you were just being pushed under? Have you wanted to crawl into a hole? All of the above are possible. What I find is that with this kind of very intense outer planet event or outer planet transit, that there is going to be a time of recuperation and recovery from the transit, and that it will also have a lasting effect, or it'll have a lasting effect that changes as you continue to develop your relationship to the transit, right? Because it it happened, right? Saturn and Capricorn happened. Saturn conjunct Pluto happened. But it's still resonating. It's still happening, just in slightly in the past. And there can be little doubt that this changed the trajectory of your life. I mean, that's just what these kinds of transits do. They can represent a radical shift. They can represent a gradual transformation. And I would suggest a careful reevaluation of going back to 2008, going back to 2017, and then going back to the beginning of 2020, and doing some reevaluation therapy here with yourself and finding out what the before and the after of all of these is. So a few other thoughts. Saturn in one sign is about coming to terms with who you are. There's something very fundamental about that. Pluto in one sign is a fundamental reconstruction of who you are. That is not quite done yet, but it is mostly done. The vast majority of that transit is over, and it remains the last, well, one of two crucial presences that remain in your sign associated with this transformational process. And overall, it's about growing up. And I would suggest that you keep that process of growing up happening at all times. There's a few different metrics for that. One of the metrics is your relationship to your work. Now, work is not everything, but in our society, it is many things, and certainly it is required of almost all people. And so your relationship to that work is one of the metrics of how you are doing with a Saturn transit, and how it's just one of the ways to evaluate how you did with the Saturn transit. And I'm fond of something that Steve Forrest said about the Saturn return, which could also apply to Saturn in your birth sign, which is that you've successfully graduated from your Saturn return when you like going to work. Very insightful thought that he probably, you know, developed over many years of observing his clients and trying to figure out what they were going through in the course of their Saturn return. And I would ask yourself how you relate to the work that you do. There's this important thing that I think is going to keep developing for you, and it's a thing for everyone, but I think that given that you're having so many first house transits and then second house transits, which we'll get into in a little while in Aquarius, have you separated the job and the paycheck? Successfully having come through a Saturn transit means that you do the job for its own sake, and then you get paid. And you don't do the job because you're getting paid. You don't do the job because you have to pay the bills, though most people do, but we're now raising the bar on this and looking at things from a developmental standpoint and from a, the challenge of doing something difficult in our world where most of the opportunities to participate meaningfully are taken away from us. Right. Everyone says, or almost everyone says, they want to participate meaningfully in some way. And yet there's not really a concept of what that would look like, what that's about. Young people are really struggling with this because it seems to me that the people born in what's called the millennial generation have a very high value that they place on meaningful participation and having an impact. And yet, those first years of being in the career market can often be, again, quoting Bly, what he describes as the road of ashes and dust, many disappointments and hard lessons learned. And one of the questions of the Saturn transit is, are you getting the message of the experiences that you have? Are you actually learning from your experiences? It's amazing that this is even a question. There's even a question of whether people learn from their experiences, because it is the most valuable thing that we do, and it's the thing that we can prove in terms of our experience of it, because we have the experience. It's not demonstrated by the presence of a college degree or some other professional license, right? It's how you actually respond to the journey that you're on, and where you are in relationship to whatever it is that you're doing. The other thing about Saturn is that it really is about taking a level of responsibility for your own situation, your own past karma, especially in Capricorn, and then an ethic that must apply to the world. And so one of the things that Saturn is going to want to really iron out is any form of a double standard or hypocrisy. And that can take any one of many, many different forms. But Saturn really does not take any bullshit. But the beauty of Saturn is that when the transit is over, if you have passed through it successfully, you'll see that you gained much more than you lost. And if you really think things over, you will notice that much, not necessarily all, but much of what you lost, you just really needed to get rid of. And so Saturn can clean up all that jetsam and flotsam and scrape down your personality to the essence of what it needs to be. And we don't really need that much personality. You don't really need that much ego. You need enough ego to remember your name and your zip code, and to hold together a framework of the energy that is coming through you. That's really all the ego should be. Though most people take themselves quite seriously, and that doesn't mean that they're taking life seriously, but they take themselves seriously. And in the process of doing so, lose the essence of something that Saturn wants to get to the bottom of. It wants to get to that true essence of what it means to be who you are, and especially if you're a Capricorn. Another facet of Saturn is your relationship to your parents. Now, I know that I have quite a few listeners who are octogenarians and a lot who are septuagenarians and sexagenarians may not have your parents being on the planet. So I'm speaking to those of you whose planets are on the parent, and for everyone else, your relationship to any other form of authority. And the thing with the Saturn transit is that it's really urging you to take over the role that your parents were supposed to have. No one has perfect parenting, and a lot of people who think they had perfect parenting, or parents who think that they did a perfect job, in many ways may have been a little too helicopterish or protective, or deprived their issue of experience that they needed. But what Saturn is saying is that the parental concept needs to be internalized in a compassionate way. So Saturn can have this, harsh feeling to it if that is not done. It can have a kind of a tough love feeling to it. But when you're having a Saturn transit, the goal, I think, and I think many astrologers would agree, is to fully internalize the Saturn principle, but also then to be flexible about it and to understand that all philosophies have their limit, and in particular, have a limit to their usefulness. And embodying the role of the teacher and the guide and the person who sets boundaries is one of those crucial roles that a Saturn transit can play. Now, I'm sure I'll come back to this in a you know at some point in the next few sections of this reading. Let's talk a little bit about the remaining Pluto, the remaining time of the Pluto transit. I've never really articulated this, but there is a lot of the responsibilities that Saturn had in ancient astrology, Pluto has been given in contemporary astrology. And it's an interesting relationship because Pluto functions in completely the opposite way of Saturn. Saturn is the immovable object, and Pluto is the unstoppable force. But they both serve as a kind of a bottom line. Saturn was the outermost planet that was used by the ancients, unless you count fixed stars, which are not planets. And Pluto is the outermost planet used by most astrologers today. There's actually relatively few astrologers who use or understand Eris, which we'll get to in just one wag of a dog's tail. And Pluto is also compelling growth, but the growth that Pluto is compelling is an inside-out growth. It is the cultivation of one's life as an endless process of learning and developing oneself and of relating to existence as a soul and not as an ego, as a as the inner being whose only purpose is to learn and grow and become and sometimes to teach from the inside out. And so Pluto is about going deeper and deeper, but it's also about committing to the journey where you really can say that life just has one purpose, which is about learning who you are and expressing who you are, not in the sense of an exoskeleton like Saturn may, like Capricorn may indicate, not in the sense of an identity, but rather the glowing light inside the identity that starts to shine through over time. And this is tricky territory for a lot of people, because the thing is that to embark on the soul's journey requires letting go of many of the trappings of the ego's journey. You know, the soul's journey would say, well, you just simply need to know how to do this and do it well. And then when you're called upon to actually serve, and the ego's journey might say, well, you become a medical doctor and everyone believes what you say, you'll make a lot of money and you'll have a Mercedes and a high-end Audi parked in the driveway and so forth and so on. And so they are images of an inner and an outer. And both Pluto and Saturn have been working the territory of your self-concept. And this is not easy. This is a radical transformation. Either transit by Saturn or Pluto can leave you with the most enormous before and after feeling in your life. With Saturn, it's only, you know, usually only a transit of 2.5 years. In your case, this has gone on for 3. And in Pluto, there'll be those peak moments when Pluto either crosses the degree of your ascendant or crosses the degree of your sun. And that will go on for about a year. And I suggest that you look up, using your birth time, if it's available, look up the degree of your ascendant and find out when Saturn came through that degree. We will help you look that up, by the way, if you need to know that, to know your rising degree or the degree of your sun. Write to cs@planetwaves.net. Send your birth data in, and then we will figure out for you when this happened. If we get a few of these requests, I will put up a little chart of the approximate date of when the transit happened to what degree of the zodiac, because it will really help you to know. And if you're very late degree sun or late degree ascendant, you're about to have this transit, and it is the breakthrough. This is a challenging time, but it is a very meaningful time, and it is essential that you go through this birthing process in a whole way. One of the beautiful things about your chart right now is that there's a minor planet called Kariklo, or Kariklo, I'm not sure the proper Greek pronunciation of it, who was the consort of Chiron. She was some kind of a nymph, and not a centaur, but Chiron, of course, was a centaur, the first centaur. And Kariklo was discovered in the 1990s, I think, in like maybe in 95, and is either the fifth centaur planet. So it's very early in the first group. The order goes Chiron, Tholus, Nessus, Espolus, Kariklo, I believe. And these form a little group, and which you can work with in a kind of a study. And we're going to cover the others in this group. I've got them all cast into your chart, and if they get their moment to speak up, I will call on them, or they'll call on me more accurately. What Kariklo does is it abides with, this is the beauty of Kariklo, is it abides with the healing process. Kariklo has a property of being a witness. It has the property of being a companion. It can serve in some ways as an assistant or a nurse, but it's in for the long haul. And right now, there is an exact conjunction between Pluto and Kariklo, which I think is softening the impact of Pluto and also allowing you to be a little bit detached from the process by being a witness to your own process. A little bit of that Buddhist, cultivating the inner observer. One thing that I have learned from a very Plutonian astrologer by the name of Martha Lang Westcott, a real beauty of a thinker and of an astrologer, not very well known, not invited to speak at astrology conferences. She does her own thing out in Wyoming and is worth looking up. Her books are wonderful. And she said something very early in my training that I took with me. And what she said was that when we're having a Pluto transit, it can just seem so agonizing and so challenging and so difficult. And you wonder, when is it going to be over? But when you start to do the transit, you start to depend upon this motivational power that Pluto gives. And then when the transit is gone, you miss it. You miss having that a kind of power assist, that thing that is always making you grow, that is always bringing things back to the to their ultimate meaning, to the level of bottom line necessity, to the to essentially to the soul level force that's driving your whole experience, that can be so easily ignored. But under a Pluto transit, which they always go on for a decade and a half at minimum, and now Pluto's about to begin a 21-year transit through Aquarius, these go on for a while, and then suddenly the emphasis changes. And I would propose that, and you want it back, that's the thing. Like, at first you fucking hate it. It's like, I can't believe this is happening. And you may seem like everything's completely going south or pear-shaped. And then the transit's over, and one of the ways you know that you mastered it is because you miss it. And we're in the situation now with a dual Saturn and Pluto transit in your life and in the life of the world. And clearly the world is getting pushed in ways it's never been pushed before. And if you look around, you'll see who is working the bottom line of this equation. Who is making sure that the truth is the truth and nothing else matters. This is an important time to be a witness to the world and to see the way that people are responding to the challenges that they're confronted with, and to see if they respect their own growth process. And I would propose using that as a mirror and encouraging yourself to be with your own growth process, to be with your own challenges of maturity and ensoulment, and of doing this thing that is very, very hard right now, particularly given the political situation and an emotional situation of our society, which is to take total responsibility for your existence. This could not be more boldly stated than by a simultaneous transit of Saturn and Pluto. Jupiter jumped into the act this year as well. There was a series. It's almost an afterthought. But one thing about the Jupiter conjunction to Pluto that took place three times, it was in April, June, and November, was it, if it was working and you were observing it, the Jupiter-Pluto series of conjunctions, which are really one but spread out over three contacts due to the retrograde effect, showed you what you were gaining by this endless Pluto, seemingly anyway, endless Pluto transit. You got some taste of the rewards of spiritual development and of focusing on soul development. You got some taste of the reward of the thing you're left with when you take away everything that's not real and all you have is what is real. And you may not have mastered this yet, but you got a glimpse of it. Back in a bit. So before I get into the transits through Aquarius, including that of your ruling planet Saturn, I want to point out one more thing about stuff going on in Capricorn. Most of the transits we've talked about in Capricorn are at the end of the run. It also happens that you have a group of three minor planets that have only recently embarked on their journey through Capricorn and are going to be around for quite some time. If I recall, all of them 20 years or so. So this is a for the foreseeable future kind of a thing. And what these transits represent is some of what you get to when you have had the help of Pluto and of Saturn scraping away all that is not real, not necessary. So the first two of these planets are Pholus and Quaoar. Pholus is the second centaur planet, discovered in 1992. And Quaoar, I'm not sure what year that was discovered. It's an outer planet. It's out a bit past Pluto. Has a 286-year orbit. So they're slow movers, and Pholus is at the slow end of its orbit, and they're going to be there for a while. And the interesting thing about Pholus and Quaoar in Capricorn in particular, this is one of the coolest things going on in astrology right now, though, you know, 25 cents to anybody who finds an article about it in the Mountain Astrologer, and if you see anyone writing about this, please do send it my way, is that Capricorn represents family. It's one of the most important signs associated with family. And identification with family and of family history, family karma, and essentially the family tree. And Quaoar and Pholus are both about ancestry and lineage. They take the theme in different ways. And what has happened over the past, 13 years, and then most recently in the past 3 years, is that much of the ordinary material of Capricorn, which is the kind of rock pile of ancestral legacy that we're left with, has been, crunched, squashed, demolished, softened up, broken down or, you know, blown sky high. And what you're left with is these two much more sublime influences that give you access to the wisdom of the past. Now, in the case of Pholus, you can inherit quite a lot of bullshit with Pholus. And there's a check with Pholus. There's like a kind of a routine diagnostic that you do when analyzing Pholus, which is to make a quick map of your family tree and draw a circle around all the alcoholics and then figure out what the hell was going on and what the influence was on you. Generally speaking, alcoholism has a distancing effect and an insulating effect from the realm of feeling and from emotional contact. So that's one element of Pholus. But the other element of Pholus is, what are you the guardian of? What has been passed down the generations that has ended up in your hands? What is that, let's say, that sacred wine from antiquity? And not that long ago, we're talking three generations plus you. So that would mean your great-grandparents. You are the keeper of something. And it is going to be very helpful to figure out what it is that you are the keeper of and what you're going to do with it. Like, what is your purpose for having it? And what is its purpose independent of your purpose for having it? So that's thing one with Pholus. And there are other elements of Pholus. You know, for example, the presence of Pholus in your chart can really accentuate the force of your personality. And while the Capricorn tendency is to hold back, the Pholus tendency is to release, to vent the pressure. And by the way, that is cautionary, saying that you need to vent pressure. And one of the functions alcohol serves is a socially acceptable way to vent pressure that happens to be somewhat toxic and chemically created and is socially acceptable and has a substantial grounding in tradition. You have to sort all that out, right? This is the thing. That means establishing your own values on these things. And ultimately, once you do the evaluation of who the alcoholics were in your family line, among your parents, your four grandparents, and your eight great-grandparents, obviously, you can't do that without mapping out your own relationship to alcohol. And that's always a good thing to do, I think, that, you know, substances exist. Mind-altering substances are a time-honored tradition. They're a vexing problem in our society, and yet they still are a time-honored tradition. And you need to make up your own relationship to them. You need to determine what is right and wrong for you and be honest with yourself about the effects of these things. Okay, second is Quaoar. Quaoar is a creation god, and I would suggest looking Quaoar up. I promise to do a program where I focus on Quaoar. It would be a good time to do a segment of Planet Waves FM because the sun's in Capricorn, Quaoar's in Capricorn, and what Quaoar does is it's ancestral lineage back to the beginning. And so one thing I suggest is that you figure out where they told you your tribe came from. Every kid is told how it got here, how the parents got here, emigrated from Ireland during the famine, emigrated from Sicily. We're part Native American. Native Americans, these Cherokees, think they came from the Pleiades. You know, we're Mexican. That means we're part Mayan. and so forth. Every kid is given some version of the mythology of the creation of the tribe. This is a fun topic. Where did the tribe come from? And the thing about Quayar is that it is a myth told in song and dance. There's a rhythm. And the gods and goddesses come out one at a time. Old Man Sky comes out first, and then Grandma Earth comes out, and they do the dance. They've got bells on their feet and their hands and shakers and maracas and little drums, and then the next ones come out, and the gods and goddesses are created in this dance. And when the kid is born, that kid being you, everyone's already doing the dance. You pop out, and hearing develops long before the kid's born. Kid, the fetus, is listening to the world and listening to the sound of mother's voice long before it's born. And so the kid pops out, and everyone's already doing the dance. And they say, here's a rattle. Here are some bells. Can you hear the rhythm? Start dancing. And so with Quayar, it's the thing that you, it's the dance everyone's already doing, and then you start to do the dance. And this quickly fades from any notion of volition or choice. Here, it's not that it's a bad thing. It's just that it's like, this is what we do. And so Quayar has the feeling of, well, this is just what we do, right? We get together on Sundays and eat spaghetti, or we get together on Friday and everyone gets drunk, or we have movie night on Sunday, and we've had movie night on Sunday ever since, you know, Dad had a home movie projector back in 1968. Whatever it is, it's what we do. And Quayar is saying, be conscious of this. Be conscious of the thing that you're told that we always do. And then the second part of Quayar is to trace the story of the tribe back to the beginning of the tribe. This is part of one thing that all of these transits in Capricorn have in common. And then, I'm about to jump to Aquarius, all foster the whole notion of self-respect, which in the end is what your astrology is about. That's the Aquarian era for you. It is about the a total study in self-respect. Very interesting thing, right? We're going to get there in a second. One more point, and this is the more difficult one. A point called Ixion has entered your sign as of recently. It dipped in briefly, I think, last year. And let me just do a quick validation check of my pronouncement here. Ixion. Okay. So and I'm using, by the way, the brilliant serenu.com, serennu.com. It's a tool for minor planets and the aspects of minor planets. Cheap to subscribe to and utterly brilliant. Ixion is now at 0 degrees of Capricorn, actually in the first degree, 5 arc minutes and 10 arc seconds. Ixion has just arrived in Capricorn. So this journey of Ixion has begun. Ixion is essentially this thing that always stalks the human race, which is the murderous, rapist impulse in the human condition. It's the genocidal impulse. All the darkest of the dark stuff is wrapped up in Ixion. I mean, it makes Pluto look like a walk in the park. And this is I don't have this on my list. Ixion, I believe, is a Plutino. It's very close to Pluto in its orbit. And the thing with Ixion is to notice this dark force traveling down the generations and understand what it is, or at least be observant. This is hard to understand about humanity. Why people become murderers, why they become rapists, why they become genocidal maniacs. And we are in an age of genocide right now. One of the things being done is the infliction of disease and death on the population. What the heck is that? And so this is the thing that everyone likes to pretend doesn't exist. And, well, he's a nice guy. And, oh, he's so charming and whatever. And it's crucial to see this, to see it for what it is, and to have a relationship to it, and to be respectful enough of it that you don't get caught in it. Okay, that all said, the emphasis of the sky is now moving into Aquarius, which is your second solar house. This whole reading is going to be kept very close to the vest in the first few houses. Fortunately, I'm about to do another, and there's a lot to cover because these first four houses are where most of the action is in your chart, and that still leaves eight more houses. I can add eight more houses to talk about. So, the emphasis of everything is moving into Aquarius. Saturn has entered as of the 17th of December. Jupiter's entered as of the 19th of December. They formed their first conjunction in Aquarius since 1405 on the 21st of December. And then comes Pluto in March of 2022. March of 2023. And because it's going to be two solid years of Saturn. And then in March of 2023, Saturn leaves Aquarius and Pluto enters Aquarius in the same month. It's going to be a big month. And the second house is traditionally the house of what you possess. It is therefore your tools of the trade, your money, your pots and pans, your movable assets, basically, including your money. Now, this is from old astrology. When we translate this into new astrology, we find out that it's about your spiritual assets, the things about you that you possess that make you who you are, and that includes your relationship to yourself and your value system, the structure and content of your value system. And this is a tender spot for humans because the evaluation is so rarely done and so rarely done honestly. And then it turns into this, lifelong discovery process that can be needlessly challenging. So you have a lot of help right now from Saturn and Jupiter in Aquarius, because first of all, there's an emphasis placed here. You do not need to be told how important it is that you have a sense of your personal assets and a sense of your personal value. And so you have this really extended period of time, on and off for the next year, but especially the next 5 months of Jupiter going through Aquarius, which will help you feel good about yourself, help you feel like your life is worth something. Saturn's process takes longer, and it's a bit more dense and more grounded and realistic, and the issue with Saturn is, okay, how are you going to make this real? Where are you going to ground this process of self-respect? Now, the terminology that's commonly used is self-esteem. I think this is a weird issue. The term has existed for a long time, but it was ultimately popularized by phrenology, the reading of bumps on the head, and there was a bump assigned to self-esteem. This is actually how the term self-esteem enters modern languages, through phrenology, according to Doug Harper at Etymology Online Dictionary. And yet, this is a crucial concept. And what I have found in my own journey of self-esteem is that I had more than I knew. and that it was my doubt that was getting in the way. And so one of the most important things you can do when the topic of the discussion goes to self-esteem is to exercise your value in yourself and to measure your sense of your value in yourself by your willingness to exercise it, by your willingness to try to do things that would seem to exceed your known parameters, and your willingness to persist in doing those things. Now, the thing, right, so if you keep trying, you know that you think it's worth it to keep trying. Now, the challenge of having Aquarius here, and it is a titanic challenge, joined by two of the Titan planets, is that you are inclined to think that your self-esteem is measurable by the value that others place on you, and that's because it is Aquarius. You would seem to think there's supposed to be some consensus about your self-esteem, that if other people agree that you're a valuable person, that must mean you're a valuable person. And that's the way the world works. Usually. It's not the way the personal journey works, right? It's not the personal quest. It's the way the cocktail party rules work. And what ends up happening is that one's self-esteem can be subjected to a consensus reality that you're okay as long as you don't ruffle any feathers or, attempt to change anything too much. You're okay as long as you agree and as long as you conform. You're okay as long as fill in the blanks, and whatever the blank is, it's about other people approving of you. And this is the thing that Saturn is here to teach you to completely dismiss. Your self-respect, by definition, cannot be dependent on the opinion that others have in you. And to any extent that it might be, it has to be like the third tier down, that your first few measures have to be about how you perceive yourself, how you develop your relationship to yourself, what do you feel your assets are. Do you respect your own integrity? What are the things that you might do or did in the past that would be diminishing of your respect for yourself? And then what do you do about them now? What do you do about them now? This is really important. And to not use the metric that others might have. And the problem with, there's a lot of problems with that. But generally, the big number one issue is it's based on appearance. And both Capricorn and Aquarius are very good at appearances and are very good at giving the appearance of propriety, the appearance of consistency and conformity, and this very quickly morphs into believing the press release. Now, the benefit here is that Saturn has been very active, and Saturn does not want to brook the whole concept of appearances, and will therefore, be the cosmic paint scraper and get down to the wood underneath everything and find out what's going on. Then that's where you do the work. While this is all happening, be mindful of the anything you do that in any way is associated with the approval of others. The true quest of Aquarius is individuation and standing up to consensus reality. This can make you unpopular, and this is untenable for most people. The power that the group holds over people, beginning with the family, is so brutal that it makes people tends to make almost everyone into just an obedient, good little boy and girl. And that is not where you're at right now. Even if it means risking danger And even if it means figuring out when you are yourself, when you do the thing that is about you, when you stand up to people, when you challenge the values of the group around you, and you are challenged back, people unfriend you, or they don't want to talk to you anymore, or for whatever reason, you're violating the rules of the game, that's when you move on and you find people who are at a more developed level of self-respect. And this serves as a positively brilliant filter where you are able to no longer be subject to the pressures of others who will say, we tell you when it's okay to respect yourself. And that, like, when you want to throw rocks at that, you know you're making progress. When you wake up one day and think, you people must be kidding me. What is this, junior high school? What is this, kindergarten? You know you're making progress. And then you really know you're making progress when you meet one other person and you do who is figuring this out, and then you start to do something together. And be mindful that this can impact your most intimate personal relationships. There's nothing worse for an intimate personal relationship than one person growing and the other person not growing. And there's nothing better for you to figure out that this is like, oh, I see, this has just got to happen. It is time for me to be my own person. It is time for me to not compromise. And that is a fantastic mantra for Saturn going through your second house. And you will open up a whole universe of possibilities for who you are and what you're capable of, and the ways you can interact with other evolving beings that really brings out the best of who you are and gives you a chance to share the best of who they are. Tune. I keep wishing it would last longer, but it gets up about 45 seconds in there. Okay, so now we come to the topic of words and the vitally important role that words play. Words are expressed in the third house in astrology, and you have Pisces in the third house. I sometimes call it the third place. You can see that right in the chart below the player. There's a little three there, and there's three little planets in there. And having Pisces in the third place suggests that you actually are quite an imaginative writer, an orator. And the thing with Pisces is that it requires a lot of development. Pisces is the thing that takes the natural, that calls for taking the natural gift and then turning it into something through a process of development and cultivation and refinement. This will be worth doing. Now, the most important thing about Pisces and the combination of the long-term, most of what I'm doing in this reading is long-term influences. I'm not really looking at the inner planets, if you haven't noticed it. The three planets indicated are Nessus, in kind of a 20-year trip through Pisces, Neptune, working its way toward the end-ish of a 15 or so year trip, and Borysici. Another one I need to put on the list of planets I have next to my desk. That's around a 300-year orbit, another slow mover. And they all have one thing in common: being truthful. in the mythology and the mythography and the delineation of all these planets, the way that they translate into astrology, they all are about the relationship between truth and lies. And we are in an exceedingly dangerous time right now when there is this notion that one's own subjective opinion is the truth. That has a word in psychology, which is psychosis. What you simply must do is admit the fact that there is a truth, and that your job is not to make the truth up, but to understand what it is and what constitutes establishment and proof of the validity of your own thoughts and your own concepts. And this is a test. It is an ongoing experiment. And the challenge here is that you might not notice this at all. It is very easy to lie to yourself with Neptune going through the third house. There's a couple of other dangerous places where Neptune can be. And Neptune is so imaginative that the made-up thing that you call the truth can be just positively beautiful. It can sound great. It can be convincing to other people. And that, by the way, is one of the things to be mindful of. Well, if other people believe it, then it must be true. That's interesting. That's not going to wash. And it will get you in trouble. And since all we're really worried about in this reading today is the process of growth and maturity and self-respect, one of the sources of self-respect is your continued willingness to be truthful, your ability to depend upon your impeccable honesty. And this takes rewrite, it takes revision, it takes listening to yourself, it takes real maturity to do this. And the differences in the Nessus factor, the Neptune factor, and the Borysici factor all address different facets of this truth-telling thing. But Nessus in particular is the kind of like hot engine in the midst of all of this. And Nessus in particular corresponds to the consequences of all that you may do. And in the third house, what you generally do is assert your viewpoint in some way. You state who you are and what you believe. And there are going to be consequences for how you handle that. And it's possible to think you're doing everything right, and then suddenly you're in the third house and it's Pisces and there's Neptune there, and you just think that your perception of the world that you live in is the universal truth. The way to do this is to apply a real measure of skepticism to what you perceive, and to be aware of your biases at all times. This is not so easy to do, but we're talking about some serious transits here. We're talking about planets that are in many ways reminders of the bottom line in total. If we make it out to the fifth house, that we'll talk about Uranus. We've got all the outer planets involved in very active ways in your chart that are working on you all at once, in particular to train you to be honest in your expression. We could say that about Pholus, about Pluto, about Saturn, about Jupiter, Nessus, Neptune, Borysici, Chiron, and Uranus. All of them are saying, get to the essence of your reality, and then keep doing it, and keep doing it, and keep doing it. The catch of Neptune, the kind of like hitch there, is it sounds good, it must be true, and also, well, the truth is too harsh. I don't really want to know. Don't tell me about that. And it has been very interesting relating to people this year on the level of what they have convinced themselves of. And I have learned to become very keen to people's ability to question themselves. And I suggest that you do the same thing for yourself. Your feedback loop, where you keep saying, is that really true? Is that really true? What does that word mean? Where did I hear that? Do I believe that? Wait, I believe that. Have I verified that? And just keep asking and keep asking and keep asking. Circle it back. Saturn will help you. Saturn values the truth. And be particularly mindful. Here's a good one. When you believe things that lots of other people believe, when you find yourself in agreement with people, that's the time to check. Because right now, very little that people agree on has any bearing in reality. And the dangers go far past the stated dangers of not believing the consensus reality. What we're being told is the consensus reality is the only safe refuge. And what I'm suggesting is that the consensus reality is the single most dangerous place that you can hang out unquestioned. So therefore, strive to do what any of the mentors who are adorning your first, second, third, and fourth houses are saying, okay, we got to apply a little bit of healthy skepticism here. It is time for a reality check. And just keep doing that. I don't know if they make a wristwatch that says reality check, or you can put the words reality check on the home screen of your phone to constantly remind you to be checking whether what you're thinking or doing is real. But, okay. So, Boris Cici, I just reread the book that Boris Cici comes out of. Boris Cici is the sun god in a religion called Bokanonism, in a really incredible book called Cat's Cradle. There's two beautiful things about Cat's Cradle by Kurt Vonnegut. The first one being that it's a work of sheer genius. And the second one is that you can actually read it in one day because the chapters are all like a page and a half and they move quickly and there's lots of blank pages. And it is sheer brilliant satire, social satire. But the point of the meta theme of Cat's Cradle is the small lies. The small lies that make people feel better about life versus the harsh truths of life. In the book is one of the people who designs the atomic bomb, who's a complete fucking moron. And he's just so convinced that he's doing the right thing. And then he invents this thing worse than the atomic bomb. And that's what the book is about. So all the same theme in the third house of your words and the third house of your immediate community. Truth is all that matters. Now, let's take a quick visit to the 10th house and then we'll go to the opposite of the 10th. You have Libra on the 10th house. The 10th house is where you manifest and express your power. As a Capricorn, the 10th sign, you have a natural affinity for the 10th house. This also works because your ruling planet is Saturn and the exalted planet of Libra is Saturn. And so there's a Saturn conjunction to your 10th house, and this makes you a natural to want to express power in the world. The thing with Libra is Libra really can be into greasing people and telling them what they want to hear and either yesing them along or, you know, becoming a yes man. And the planet that is, I think, having the most influence in Libra right now is another one of these slow-moving bits out in the Kuiper Belt called Logos. One of the most important concepts in all of Greek thought is the word that means the word and the word from which the concept of logic is derived. And with Logos in Libra, the reminder is it cannot just sound good. It has to be real. It has to pass the test of logic and reason. Remembering that our notion of logic and reason right now currently is, if I believe it, it must be perfectly logical and reasonable. And it, almost anyone you meet on the street will be holding this thought form in their mind. It is like tying your shoes these days. You just think, oh, well, if I believe it, it must be true. And Logos is saying, if you want to concentrate your responsibility in the world, if you want to be a meaningful leader of whatever you're leading, whether it's a team, a company, a family, or the executive function of your own life, learn about logic and reason. Learn the logical fallacies and learn how to spot them. The most serious logical fallacy, meaning the thing that violates Logos right now, is the appeal to authority. Well, if so-and-so said it, it must be true. Or all the experts can't be wrong. That's the appeal to authority fallacy. And the ad hominem attack. Oh, that guy said it. It can't be true. These completely bypass the need to evaluate everything on its own terms and making sure that it fits the larger concept of being genuine, where every step in the logic is taken. Now, because you have this in the 10th house, it's going to affect the way that your decisions influence other people, right? Because the 10th is always about your relationship to other people, and it's also about your relationship to the powerful institutions of the world. And at the moment, these powerful institutions have all gone bat guano crazy and all need to be subjected to logic. That means reading the fine print. I've been reading a lot of fine print of like these new drugs that have just come out in the past couple of weeks. The fine print is harrowing. And the fine print is therefore instructional of how to take care of yourself. The fine print is revealing of the abuse of power. And so part of what you do with Saturn in Aquarius is you, as an emerging individual, is you challenge the abuse of power that you're subjected to, that people you love are subjected to, that your society is subjected to, and that your country is subjected to. And this calls for understanding the reasoning process. It calls for understanding logic. One of the first things I was taught as an investigative reporter on really what amounted to my second major story was a guy named Paul Merrill. We were in a swimming pool in Vegas, and I was being instructed in toxic tort litigation. And he said, Paul Merrill said, the opinion of a scientist is not a finding of science. I had to think about that for a while. And then it became manifestly obvious. Science is a method. Science is a step-by-step reasoning process that must be subjected to repeated experimentation, preferably around the world, in different laboratories by different teams under different conditions before something is the truth. And the world that we live in is this third house Neptune bubble of, well, if that person wearing a lab coat says it, it must be true. And your job as essentially the president and chief executive officer of your own life is to make sure that the steps were followed and to make sure that you take full responsibility anything that involves a decision that you make where you are counting on someone else having followed those steps. This is really serious business. And what you will perhaps inadvertently, perhaps intentionally cultivate is your leadership skill. Because your leadership skill is always, you know, when the president and a cop essentially take the same oath of office, right? Your average neighborhood campus policeman or city council member or Supreme Court justice or the president of the United States take an oath of office where they agree to abide by the law. And the law is not just what's written in the book. The law is how you get there. We're talking about natural law in this case. And you want to know what the what natural law says and what the law of the land says and abide by that. So the thing that you are beholden to in the end is reason. If this topic interests you, it might, given how important the topic of ethics is to the second house, right? Ethics are your personal law. A book called Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance. Very little about motorcycles. Motorcycle is just a metaphor. But what this book is really about, well, it's really about three or so different things. But the most, one of those three things that this book is about is the importance of the reasoning process and understanding the different types of logic, whether you're going from the general to the specific or the specific to the general. And since we're on the topic of logic, the most egregious way logic is abused in our era is what I call the abuse of inductive logic. Two examples proves it, or one example proves it. It's going from the specific to the general without having gone through the steps that you need to verify that that's actually true and that something else might actually be true. Okay, let's go to the fourth house. Here's where we get into the heart of the matter when it comes to your confidence and your security, your sense of belonging, your sense of personal safety, and how it is that your family can have so much impact and influence on you. The fourth is one of those very, bottom line places where we measure the influence of our family. And you have Aries in the fourth house. And what this is suggesting is that your sense of belonging, of being, and of approval of yourself, and your notion of your own identity is highly dependent on what your family thinks of you. And your chart says this in several different ways. And so it is well worth understanding the way that this happens and the ways in which your individuality and your identity and your ability to express yourself, which is why you came here. The reason you came to Earth is to be yourself. You didn't come to Earth to serve the insecurities of all these other people who want you to be someone else so that they don't have to feel so insecure. They don't want you to play the guitar because they didn't do it as a child. They don't want you to sing because they didn't get to do it. They don't want you to have too much fun, all this stuff. This is really where people's vital force energy goes quite often. So Aries on the fourth can be highly given to conforming for the sake of not getting thrown out onto the street, not being made into an orphan, deep primal tribal stuff in there. You have help on the way. And in fact, help arrived in 2018 and is just now getting cooking. And that help is in the form of Chiron. And what Chiron does to Aries is it makes the self-actualization experience of Aries irrefutable and inevitable. And Chiron is nothing if not being not an individual. Chiron is the original maverick, the word used by its astronomical discoverer, Charlie Kowal, who said this thing is a maverick. It behaves like a planet, behaves like an asteroid, behaves like a comet. It does not fit in any known category. It's a maverick, and he named it Chiron because Chiron is this hybrid of human and horse, and also the founder of medicine. So Chiron is the master healer because he taught medicine to the god of medicine. So one of the things Chiron did was raised not only a generation of classical Greek heroes, including Jason and Achilles and Heracles, but also taught medicine to Asclepius. And in every way stands out. And so with Chiron in the fourth in Aries, you don't really get much choice. You are going to stand out in your community. You're going to stand out in your family. You're going to stand out in any situation where you or others might seek the safety and security of whatever, but very often the safety and security of self-deception. And this is not exactly a comfort zone to be in this place, because you're going to make a lot of people feel insecure merely by being confident in yourself. You will make a lot of people feel like liars merely by being truthful. That old expression about, like, you know, when there's in a society full of lies or an environment where everyone's lying, one statement of truth sounds like a pistol going off. So get used to it, but this will test your mettle. This will do the thing that you've always wanted to do, which is to cultivate you into the strength of character that will let you stand up to life enough to live the life you want to live. To live the life you want to live, you have to be willing to challenge everything and anything around you that is not that, if only by doing something different than those things, which is, in fact, challenging to all of those things. And as you do this, you're going to start to gather people around you. A new family, a new community, a new culture will form around you, or you may find it, or it may find you, or yours and its may in some way merge. And it'll start with a couple of people. And, you know, it's kind of like if you learn how to play an instrument, you're going to want to hang out with musicians. And then everybody who's not a musician, well, you might be friends with them. But if you want to play music, you got to hang out with musicians. If you want to be a truthful person, you've got to hang out with other truthful people. If you want to self-actualize, you have to hang out with other people who self-actualize. If you want to respect yourself, it is crucial that you hang out with people who have self-respect, because you're going to get really sick of all the people who are constantly saying poor me and making excuses for everything that they think that they can't do. And that's a good thing to be sick of that. That doesn't mean judging people or harshly in some way putting them down, but you will run out of tolerance for it as a day-to-day thing, and find language to express to people. But mostly, you will function by setting a wholesome example for people. And that, in some ways, that's besides the point. You know, your integrity is not there for other people. Your integrity exists for yourself. Your integrity is so that you can go to bed at night feeling good, or, as often happens in the case of people with an actual conscience, questioning a little bit about, you know, did I do the right thing there? Oh, did I piss that person off needlessly? Was I a little harsh with that person? Oh, I owe an apology. Okay, that doesn't mean apologizing for your life. You know, if you owe someone an apology, you say, I'm sorry, I was such a bitch. You know, thanks for putting up with me. And you move on. And you move on. That's what an honest person does. Let's cover one more house. And what are we doing? I've extended the length of these readings by 15 minutes. I'm trying to really honor that. But part two of this is coming, a couple of different part twos. Your written reading is done, by the way, and then there'll be a birthday reading coming up. Let's go to the fifth house. We're doing a nice job of going in soldierly order here. Fifth house is Taurus, your fellow Earth sign. The fifth house is the house where you really start to get to celebrate your existence. And sadly, most people either don't get there, they skip it over and go right from the sense of family in the fourth to work in the sixth. And the fifth is a great place to be in astrology. And you have a magnificent transit going on there now. Now, the fifth is about the kinds of fun that children like to have, children up through teenagers. It is about experimentation, curiosity, The willingness to take risks, you know, God watches drunks, fools, and little children. So it's not necessarily like, well, it does, I was going to say, putting $1 million in the stock market if you have it. The fifth is about investments and speculation, and it would be irresponsible of me as an astrologer to say, if I don't say, be very careful speculating financially, given the combination of Taurus, value, and the fifth, speculation, and Uranus, the planet I'm talking about, which is the planet of wild turns of fortune. And so you could easily be tempted by, this stock introduction that's like, wow, it's only 25 cents a share. This is going to be the next Apple. Careful. Maybe make a small investment, or if you're very confident, make a modest investment. But that's, having said that, the real beauty of the fifth is with Uranus in the fifth, is you get to bust out of any constraints that were placed on you as an experimental being, as a creative being, as a being driven by curiosity, and as a creative person. Now, the idea of the fifth is to not paint the Mona Lisa or sculpt the David. The idea of the fifth is to experiment and have fun. So if under this theory, the Eric Frances theory of the fifth house, especially with Uranus, especially with Taurus, if you're doing something like painting or sculpting or learning an instrument, and you know, something electric could be a lot of fun, the place to aim for is to have fun, to get to the point where this is just fun. Now, you may have to learn scales. That's not the most fun part of a guitar. You may have to learn how to count, learn rhythm. There's always that discipline piece, but the goal would not to be perfect. The goal would be to just like it, to just have a good time doing it. And as a Capricorn, and under current global situations, with a lot of Saturn transits going on, you need a point of release. Part of that point of release is to be celebratory and experimental in your sexual endeavors. And this would apply to all creative and self-creative endeavors. Go into the affairs of the fifth house with the spirit of a teenager who just wants to have a good time and is willing to take a little chance to have a good time. Spend a little money on the things that you love, and make sure you put some time into them, and guide yourself out of this heavy sense of responsibility that you in particular may have under the influence of Saturn transits, and just get the good start. Get the good part going. Get the juicy part going. Life is to live. And there's no better way to say life is to live besides Uranus going through the fifth house. Don't forget to check out your sign rising, and share this reading if you think that it will be beneficial to someone else. And I'll see you somewhere else around the zodiac. Lots of love. Happy New Year. And bye for now.